you tell her not to listen, she gets very angry. If she gets,
no, right now she's looking red and angry and glaring at me.
She's irritated. Mine's irritated too. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we talk about our favorite tech from 2015. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. Welcome back.
We're back, yes. It's good to be back.
It's good to have a break, but it's also good to be back.
Yep.
So, Terrifying Robot listener, we have a little bit of housekeeping for you to get started on this inaugural episode of Season 2.
Yes.
And why do I call it Season 2, Kelly?
Because we're switching to seasons, Jonathan.
That is correct. So, dear listener, we are planning to keep things steadier overall by taking breaks a few times a year. So we'll probably do like 12, 15 shows in a row. So roughly break down into quarters, take a little break in between, get a little more in-depth on stuff in the episodes, maybe do a little series on the same topic so we can get you a little more educated amidst, edumacated.
Edumacated.
How do they say that in Kentucky?
Schooled. I don't know. Learning.
Yeah, exactly. If it smarts, rub it on your head. So yeah, as a quick teaser, our first little mini series this season is going to be on 3D printing, and we're going to talk about types of 3D printers in more detail than we normally would. We're going to talk about some consumer applications that we can imagine or that already are starting to exist, and controversy.
Controversy.
Yes, that's always
printing,
good.
Printing weapons of mass destruction and that sort of thing.
Yes, printing adult toys of mass destruction.
Oh, that's scary.
Yes.
Moving right along.
Let's jump into our feature for this inaugural episode of Season 2.
You want to give us a Casey Kasem style countdown?
I would love to do that. Double reverse Casey Kasem.
Nice. I know you live for these, so.
Yes. So what we're going to talk about is the top tech of 2015 based on stuff we're still using. So not flash in the pan stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff we used all year.
Yep. And not saying this is the top tech of 2015, just that it's our favorites that we have used personally.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Things that we are using on a regular basis, not stuff that seemed cool and we don't use anymore. And we've got five of them, ladies and gentlemen. So without further ado, number five, Google Cardboard.
Google Cardboard.
Longtime dear listeners of the show will know that I'm a personal big fan of Google Cardboard. Did you ever get one?
I did, yes, but not until like December 30th. So it's kind of cheating for me to count it, but I was immediately enough blown away with it for what it is. And having had some previous VR experience and what have you too, I'm gonna go with it.
It is a great thing, and the reason why is because of how massively accessible it is, and
yes,
that it delivers a good enough experience. So at least in the US and many other countries, the smartphone penetration is quite high. So at any given party or get together or hanging around the house, somebody's probably got a smartphone.
Yeah.
And you just take this thing and stuff it inside of a folded up pizza box, basically, and go to one of a growing list of websites, including YouTube, that have immersive 360-degree videos that respond to the accelerometer in the phone. So, and sometimes, not all cases, but some cases are give a sense of depth with a, what's it called? The word's escaping me. Not bipolar, but the ViewMaster effect.
Yeah, where the cameras are a little offset and
right. So you basically have two almost exact screen views. That's going to drive me nuts. But anyway, so you can just sort of turn your head around. In some cases, you get a sense of depth. In other cases, you just get a sense of place, and you can look around inside of a running video, which is just, it's just amazing. And for, you know, if you assume the smartphone is a sunk cost, the Google Cardboard is free if you want to just print it out and cut one out.
Cut one out and make one. Yeah. And what impresses me most about it is it's not the most impressive VR experience I have ever seen. Oculus kind of in many ways kind of blows it away. But sure. What it is incredibly accessible. And it, like you said, it does give you a good enough VR experience. And it's just to think about the possibilities of that. I mean, we linked to an article earlier on Facebook about smartphone usage in Myanmar, for instance. Mm-hmm. And just to think that people in places like that, you know, you could still give them this VR experience pretty much for free.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the New York Times, at least in the United States, the New York Times sent out a Sunday edition in 2015 with 1 million Google Cardboards inserted, which is just wild. Outside Magazine did the same thing to their 75,000 subscribers. And what that means is that people who have not yet experienced any variety of what is sort of loosely referred to as virtual reality get a free taste of it. And in my experience, that first taste is jaw-dropping. Even if it's, you know, in a folded up pizza box, it is totally game changing.
Yeah, it's still pretty mind blowing.
Yeah. So a quick story: at Thanksgiving this year, we had about 30 people, all, you know, extended family and friends. And there were a good showing of nieces and nephews on my side of the family were there, and they ranged in age from 2 to 13. And my brother's kids, I think it was like the 10-year-old, for some reason we got to talking about something related. I can't remember how we got started talking about it, but I grabbed one of a pile of Google Cardboards that I had in the basement.
Because you can have a pile of them.
Yeah, they're practically free. So I said, "Oh, check this out." And I showed her the Google Cardboard demo apps. Mm-hmm. And she put it on her face, and she was sort of like that preteen skeptical, like, I'm game for this, but yeah. I'm getting ready to rag on it. And she just sort of not on purpose moved her head. Like, she moved a little bit mm-hmm. while she was standing there and immediately recognized that the video reacted. And her jaw just dropped open yeah. and she was like, "Wow." She immediately starts looking around all, you know, all over the place. And within seconds, every single kid in the room was crowded around her trying to grab the thing.
Yeah. And it really is the most intuitive user interface ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one question people ask is, "How do I click?" Mm-hmm. That's the only thing they ask. And the particular one has like a little washer device on the side of it that uses magnets to click the phone screen, but there's a bunch of different ways you can do it. But anyway,
yeah.
they took turns with that thing. And by the end of the night, I was just like, "Look, you guys can just keep it. You're obviously in love with it."
Right. Right.
So I am so bullish on this lo-fi VR, like lo-fi VR. That sounds so weird, but
it does. Yeah.
Huge fan. I would be shocked if we didn't see more publishing companies sending out these in their publication to unlock basically content that is really, there's nothing to compare it to. It's not like 3D video at all. It's so much more better.
Yeah. Yeah. There's really, really no way to compare it.
Mm. So, yeah. So Google Cardboard, that's something that's become part of our, I wouldn't say we use it every day, that's for sure, but we use it regularly in cases where it comes up. And I am, I don't see myself running out and getting any of the really high end stuff yet because I haven't tried it. So I don't really feel the need. This feels good enough to me for mm-hmm. now.
Well, I mean, we're obviously going to get the high end stuff, but we have alternate reasons for that. If I just wanted a VR experience, like to just look at some videos, or I wouldn't, unless you're doing like highly immersive gaming, or in our case, you're developing for the platform, I wouldn't spend that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
I would go with something like the Cardboard, or maybe like the Gear VR, somewhere in the $200 to $300 range.
Right. Yep. So Gear VR, for people who don't know, is a similar sort of headset that is, it's like an empty headset that you can mm-hmm. click your Galaxy Note into, and it does basically the same thing, but it's much cooler looking and probably fits better and all that stuff.
Oculus compatible and all that.
Oh, check that out. Did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about all that. And VR is what makes Cardboard our number 5 pick.
Yes.
Number 4. Super Mario Maker.
Yes, this is a game we picked up for the Wii U pretty much the weekend it came out. And what it does is it gives you basically just a level editor and lets you go in and create Mario worlds, like the 2D side-scrolling Mario worlds, using assets and music, all of that from, I think it's 3 or 4 different Mario games now. And yeah, you can create them, share them. It makes some really cool, fun stuff with it. And I love it because it just really sort of fosters creativity, and it gets people creating functional games that you can sit down and play together. Yeah, it's just we've had a lot of fun with it.
We've talked about this a couple times, and I think I'm sold because I know Cooper wants one really bad.
Mm-hmm.
He wants a Wii U in general because his cousin has one and they have a lot of fun with it. But we already have an Xbox, and I'm like, man, you know, really? Yeah, we have two?
Nintendo's platform has a lot of great kid and family games, though, that other platforms don't have. So, I mean, if you have young kids and you're looking for kids and family type stuff, it's a good way to go.
Yeah, I'm sold. I have all sorts of, if anybody wants to hear an endless rant about software platforms, just ping me on Twitter about Xbox Live and I will not stop.
We can send you, we have an old niche episode about it. We can link them too.
Yeah. I have had problems to say the least. But even if that was all smooth, you go into the interface, and rightly so, it has a sort of advertising quality to it where it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, these are the new games. And like, there's like zombie heads exploding, and you know, it's very much not oriented. Right.
It's not family friendly platform.
It's really not.
Yeah.
So I am super tempted to do that. I am a huge Mario fan from way back.
Oh, you would really like Mario Maker then. We just found that it's great quality time together as the family, because someone will build a level and then, hey, come over and play this, and we'll play it through, and oh, you should do this, or you should do that. And we ended up kind of changing things and designing things and around together. And I find it really great from just a fostering creativity sort of perspective.
Yeah, I am probably in the minority of parents who have kids that are my age, 2 and 6, that really are not, I wouldn't say I encourage screen time. I don't need to encourage screen time. They love it.
Right.
And I find that there are certain things that they do, particularly on the iPad. They would stay on the iPad all day if you let them. There are some things that turn them into monsters, and there are some things that stimulate their creativity. So like if, mm-hmm. if Cooper's just browsing through YouTube game videos all day, he gets unmanageable. But right. if he's using like Scratch Junior, or he's playing one of the amazing Toka games, Toka makes these unbelievable games.
Right. Or even Minecraft.
Minecraft. I forgot to mention it because it's so prevalent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Minecraft big time. Super creative, interactive. You can play it on the computer with other kids. It's social. It's unreal. Minecraft's unreal. But when he's doing that stuff, he gets very inspired, and you can see that mm-hmm. it's bringing out a really nice side of him. And when it comes time to do stuff that's traditional creative, like, okay, now we're going to color, or now we're going to, it feels really, sometimes he's into it, but other times he's really not. And it's like, and you can kind of see why. So what we've been doing is stuff like, you say, okay, you don't want to do that, and I don't want you to just be zoned out into YouTube. So let's do something creative with the technology. So we'll do like stop motion Lego videos, or like he got a GoPro for Christmas. So the other day he got all his ninja gear on, and you know, it was like Nerf guns. And we did a little trailer for an action movie where it was like an alien action movie, and he like went around the house and I followed him, and came out in like, you put it into iMovie and like press 2 buttons and it looks like a movie. So I really like this idea of Super Mario Maker, because since I don't mind screens, you know, I don't ban them across the board, but I do recognize that there are some activities that are more productive than others and more creative than others. So this one's like one that would be fun for everyone. So I am looking forward to dropping some coin on that.
Yeah, some of those sweet gold coins.
Exactly. some mushrooms while I'm at it. Oh, wait, that's 30 years ago. Anywho, you know what that does?
That brings us to number three.
Number three, Pebble smartwatches.
I was surprised that this made your list because I think critics kind of panned it. I think maybe they were expecting more than what they got out of it. So I'm curious to hear your take on it.
Yep. The dear listener may recall me mentioning when I got my latest Pebble Time Steel, which is the which is actually not the latest release now. They have a round one now, and I think they even have a thin rectangular one now. They have like five or six or, geez, probably more like eight models now. Mm-hmm. But mine was the top-of-the-line Kickstarter one for their most recent Kickstarter. And it was record-breaking. Their first one was record-breaking. They sold millions of dollars, yeah, anyway. And when I first got it, it was everything it promised to be, but I found it hard to read the screen because they put a convex crystal on it.
Yeah, that was the biggest complaint that I heard about it, was that it was hard to see. So I didn't even bother trying.
Yeah, yeah, it would not work. So it has all the other Pebble goodness. So it has the 7-day battery life. I got the Time Steel, which is an upgrade from the original Pebble Time in terms of a fashion. I would not say that it's a head turning watch, but it is no longer obviously a smartwatch.
Right. And you're not wearing a plastic swatch watch on your wrist.
Yeah. Made out of like silicone, gross, yuck.
Candy colored.
Yeah. 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 It's like a swatch. Yeah,
the original Pebble was kind of cheap looking.
It was, yeah. I'm 40 something, almost 50. I'm not wearing a rubber watch. Right. You know, it's just not happening. Anyway, the point is that this probably drives home the point a little bit better. So in the past year, I got a brand new Zen Watch 2 Android Wear watch, gorgeous, full-featured touchscreen, just really nice-looking watch. I got sort of middle-of-the-line, like $600 Apple Watch with a nice band and the silver body and all that stuff. And so even though I was less wowed by the new Pebble Time Steel than I wanted to be, just because I had a harder time seeing it. Mm-hmm. And still, it's the best one of any of them.
And still the one you keep on your wrist.
Yeah. I mean, I would wear, from a looks standpoint, the Zen Watch 2, for my money, is better looking than any of the Apple Watches.
I walked past a Zen Watch 2 in the store the other day, and I was very tempted by it just because of the looks.
It's a good looking watch.
It is, yeah.
And I think the Apple Watch is kind of chubby looking. It looks like it looks chubby to me. It's not bad. It's certainly a nice looking watch, but the Zen Watch 2 is just as nice. But man, that battery life, the combination of the battery life being bad and the fact that it sucked, like I don't know. This isn't really an episode about why those other watches are not great. I'll just tell you that I have all those watches and still the Pebble is the best one, even if it's not as amazing as I had hoped it was.
And it may be hard to see, but it's a lot easier than the others to see in daylight.
Yeah. The only time it's hard to see is when you're in low light, and then you can just like press the button and turn the backlight on and then you can read it. So in this new version is a color e-ink screen. So it's nicer looking than the previous generation, which was more like a Kindle screen. Like a Kindle e-reader screen. But it's great. The battery life is unbelievable. I lost it the other day because I've been going to karate at nights and I stuck it in my gym bag and I couldn't find it anywhere. And I kept on hearing it buzz. I'm like, I can hear it somewhere. Where is it?
It's here somewhere.
I couldn't find it. And even though every time my iPhone rang, that thing buzzed for a full minute, like it was running the vibrate motor.
Yeah.
That it was still like a week and a half later when I pulled it out of the bag, it still had like tons of battery and I plugged it in to charge and it was done charging in 5 minutes.
Nice, nice.
The battery is just not an issue on that watch. And it's, if you're in the market for, putting a little notification dashboard on your wrist, which I think is not for everyone, but is for a lot of people, then, you know, hands down, the Pebble just like wins it. I'm not going to be charging I've got I think it was $650 for that Apple Watch. It's hanging next to my bed. I haven't worn it. I haven't worn it 5 times.
Yeah. When you're talking about a watch, something that you have to charge every single, less than a day. Mm-hmm. Uh-uh.
Dead by dinner.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's probably enough about the Pebble time, which brings us to number two and number one.
Yeah, we're cheating on this one. We both had this on our list.
Yes, we both had the same number one pick.
Yes, and it's appropriate that it's on there two times because we both have two of these.
So, terrifying robot listener, you probably know that we are going to say that Amazon Echo is our number one pick for 2015.
Echo.
This thing has completely invaded our daily life, and we love it.
Yes, we do. It's like having, I don't want to say it's like another member of the family, because it's not quite, and not quite that cozy with it yet, but it's like having a, I don't know, like some kind of ever-present secretary.
Yeah, it is surprising how often the use case emerges where you're in your house somewhere, and you don't want to pull out your phone, but you want to take some action, like add something to a shopping list, give yourself a reminder, change the intensity of the lights, turn them on or off, turn the music up or down, change the music.
Set an alarm.
Oh, yeah, the timers. Setting timers all the time.
Or you're cooking and you want to know, okay, how many tablespoons are in 3/4 of a cup?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Every morning when I'm, virtually every morning when I'm getting dressed, if I'm planning on leaving the house, which actually isn't that often, I'm like looking in my closet and I'll say, Alexa, what's the weather today?
Yeah. Yeah. I probably ask her the weather 2 or 3 times a day because I'm weird like that. But I apparently, I did not realize until I got Alexa how much it apparently satisfies me to know exactly what the weather is at all times.
Yeah.
If I'm going to go out.
You have that in common with Erica. She needs to check the forecast every 15 minutes.
Yeah. I'm kind of like that.
Mm. And then she likes to spend a few minutes talking about how it changed so much from the last time. How could these people get paid to be meteorologists? Yeah. And it's like a constant source of agita.
Erica and I should get together and talk about the weather.
As the older I get, the more I like it.
Yeah.
So for the uninitiated, I'm sure there aren't too many of you out there, but what we're talking about is a cylindrical device roughly the size of a can of Pringles, which has a sort of dial. The top of it is like a cap you would unscrew. It doesn't actually unscrew, but it turns like it would.
Yeah, don't do that.
Do not do that. Do not unscrew that. Imagine what would jump out.
A little tiny person.
Yeah, Pandora's box. Be like ghosts and stuff. So it's got this, like a critical piece of the UX is that the top of it is ringed by a multicolored LED, mm-hmm. which gives the impression that it looks at you when you start talking and is focused on you. And then it does this like barber pole thing when it's processing your instruction.
Yeah.
And if you tell her not to listen, she gets very angry. If she gets,
no, right now she's looking red and angry and glaring at me.
She's irritated. Mine's irritated too. And I actually felt bad just that I just said mine. I called it mine. I should have said she.
Instead of referring to her as a her. Yeah.
Yeah.
I never refer to it as an it.
Yeah, never. It's rude.
Except for just then. Yeah, it's always she. Mm-hmm. She lost internet connection and she started getting red and making these uncomfortable beeping noises. And I was like, the thing has two buttons and I'm saying, well, what do I do? The only thing I could think do was say, Alexa, are you feeling okay?
Yep. Cooper chastises me if I don't say please and thank you to her.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny. Dad, you forgot to say blues. So funny. Well, this, folks are probably, if they're not familiar with this, they may be familiar with Siri or Google Now, or maybe even for the real nerds out there, Cortana.
This is like that, but better.
Yeah, it's surprising how different it is that it's plugged into the wall and it's always available. You don't have to press anything or bump anything or flip anything over. There's no physical interaction. So when you're doing the dishes or, you know, you're trying to put your pants on or whatever, you just talk to your house and your house answers you.
Yes. And having the integration with the lights is one of my favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've talked about the Hue bulbs in the past and just how awesome it is to be able to open an app on your phone and control your lights. And if you thought that was good, just speaking to thin air and having your lights respond is way better.
A lot of times when I talk about this, either in person or online, people are like, you're so lazy. Why don't you just, And my response to that is, oh yeah, take your TV remote and put it under the couch and see how lazy you are. The TV remote drastically transforms the experience of watching TV. And I am here to tell you that getting up from a comfortable seated position with a cool adult beverage to go change the lights is for savages.
It's so annoying.
Like the classic, this hasn't happened to me in a long time, but it used to be pretty common for me to be on the couch in the middle of the night with a baby falling asleep on
me. A baby sleeping on you, yeah.
And what I would do back then was try and fish my phone out of my pocket to turn the lights down or do whatever. But, you know, now it would just be like, Alexa, turn the lights down.
Yeah. She understands you if you whisper to her. She understands you if you yell at her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it is funny. It is. There's a couple of things funny about it. One, it's the first thing I can think of, with the possible exception of the smartphone, it's the first thing that actually makes me feel like I'm living in the future. It gives me that feeling like, oh, this is what it's going to be like. Because it doesn't do a ton of things, but the things it does do, you need a lot, and it works.
Mm-hmm. Also, good source of lame jokes.
Yeah, for those who don't know, you can go on the smartphone app for Alexa, which is the voice assistant that's inside of the device, the Echo device, and you can add apps to it, and I'm making air quotes because they call them skills, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, it's great.
So they're
learning.
Yeah, so she gets more and more skills. You broke up. Oh. There you go. There you are. Cool. Yeah, so she gets more and more skills. And what are the? So what's this? You installed you added the skill. You gave Alexa the skill of telling jokes.
No, she has it built in.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, you can just say, Alexa, tell me a joke. And she'll tell you a really lame joke.
Nice.
Yeah.
I installed a knock-knock one, which was not default. And I also installed the fart one, because we've got a 6-year-old boy.
You've got a 6-year-old boy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you like to hear a lame joke?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Where did Alexa have her first dance? The Amazon.prom.
Oh, that is so bad.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Let's do this. Let's do this right.
Okay.
Hold on. Hold on, dear listener. Alexa, tell me a joke.
How does NASA organize a party? They plan it.
That was so bad.
Yeah. A lot of her jokes are bad puns.
Here's one. Here's the test that I do on all of my voice interfaces, because I'm always curious. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious what, with a voice interface, you have to program for like any age group that can talk.
Right.
So I always do this one. Alexa, is Santa real?
I don't know him personally, but I've heard a lot of good things about Santa. If I ever meet him, I'll tell you.
Yeah. They all have a yeah. different vague yeah. answer.
Yeah.
Love that. So that's number one. That's probably enough about Echo. We've talked about Echo before, and yeah. it is fabulous. I've, you know, given them as gifts. There's 30,000 like 4 or 5 star reviews on Amazon. The thing is, it was sold out over Christmas.
Yeah.
The thing is great. Yeah. If you're thinking about buying one, you think you might like it, get it, because you'll like it. So that was number two and number one. So since we cheated the dear listener and only really gave them four, we wanted to do one honorable mention, and that is Oculus Rift.
Yes.
Which has already come up a bit in this episode.
It has, and it didn't make our list because it was not commercially available in 2015.
Exactly. But it is now.
It is now. We, however, are holding off on buying it until later in the year when the handsets are released in hopes of getting a good package deal.
Yep. Well, and you already have one.
And, well, yeah, we have the developer kit, the DK2.
Yes. So
we're holding off on the commercial version until the hand controllers come out as well.
So now what's the list price for the consumer version?
I think it's around $600.
Which isn't too bad if the stories are true that it is like 10x more crazy than something cheap like Google Cardboard.
It is. The dev kit is, at least. So I can't imagine the commercial version being worse. I definitely think it's $600 worth of hardware.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an unreasonable price for it at all. It is a bit of a high price, but it's not nearly as high as the price of the hardware for the computer that you're going to need to run the thing. So it's going to remain a high-end gaming accessory for a while, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. So probably the first wave of people who will want one or get up off the coin to buy one are people who already have a crazy gaming rig and are really into that, because then that's mm-hmm. already a sunk cost, and they'll just be like, "Wow, if I, you know, you spent like $3,000 on this this right. tower Alienware right. thing."
God, not Alienware
or whatever. I don't know. I'm not really a gamer.
You're so out of date on this. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, the people are going to like $600. That's $4 cheaper than my graphics card. I'll get one. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the Oculus is clearly the forerunner for this technology, mm-hmm. and they've got tons of money behind them, and it is finally commercially available. It's even by the sort of from the mouth of the, I guess he's the CEO, Palmer Luckey or whatever.
Palmer Luckey, yes.
He's like, you know, he's saying like 2016 is not the year of VR. I think he's trying to keep expectations. He's always been trying to keep expectations very realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think 2016 might be the year of VR. I don't think it's going to be the year of Oculus because of the price point.
Totally agree.
But I think it might be the year of VR.
Yep. I think with something like Cardboard or even Samsung VR, there's enough of that. There's the chicken and egg problem is like, why are we going to create mm-hmm. content for these things when no one has them? But if you can send, if the New York Times can send out 1 million of them for free or close to free, then it's kind of like, this might be a bit of an opportunity.
Yeah. When you can easily get that kind of distribution, it sort of incentivizes the creating content.
Exactly. And, you know, again, it turns into this virtuous cycle where it's like, oh, cool. You know, for creative types, they're like, geez, the market's wide open here. If I'm sick of competing in some other realm and I'm really excited about this technology, there aren't a lot of big players in this space. So, you know, do something wild like mm-hmm. Windy Day or like some of the stuff that like the Paul McCartney concert or, oh, there's so many different potential use cases. That, you know, we had the Village 3D guest on the show a while back, talking about like real estate, like remote virtual real estate tours. There's all these like wild use cases that you can imagine. And if the cost, the cost of entry for the viewer is close to zero and the cost of creation for the producer is close to zero, which it is. You can get a 360-degree, basically like a flip cam the size of a flashlight that you can carry around for like $200.
Oh, wow. The prices are really coming down on this stuff pretty quickly.
Yeah. The quality is not great, but right. it totally works. And you can stand it up on a table. It's basically a GoPro that looks in every direction, but they're really mm-hmm. small. Like the, you know, it's like smaller than an iPhone 4.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty decent quality. I thought I ordered one now that I think of it, but maybe I didn't.
Well, FedEx just delivered something to my house and I have no idea what it was. Maybe that's it.
Maybe I sent it to you.
Maybe you sent it to me.
Exactly. So now I'm thinking, what if I could plug 360-degree vision right into my retina and I could see all around me at all times?
That like I have an empty socket I could use.
Oh, man. There's a video about a guy that did that. I'm sure we talked about it.
Yeah, I've seen it.
All right. So true to form, we are way off in the weeds. So let's bring it back to the central topic, which is the tech from 2015 that actually changed our lives. I think that's fair to say.
I think so too. Yeah. This wasn't a big tech buying year for me.
I second that motion. I bought a lot of really old school analog stuff like fountain pens and notebooks and things like that.
I mean, I bought some nice pieces of technology, but it's stuff like really nice keyboard and soldering stations and things like that. So
not exactly connected.
No.
All right, cool. So dear listener, welcome back. We are hope you happy to have us. I've been watching too much Yoda.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
I've been watching a lot of Star Trek.
Yeah, we are hope you happy to have us.
We are hope you are. I can't even say it wrong right. Anywho, we are happy to be back. So
we are.
I'll leave it at that. That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog? Just think of two friends who dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com for links to iTunes, Facebook, and RSS feeds. If you don't have two friends, you can still help us out by leaving a nice review in iTunes. Thanks.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.